Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
You're welcome to Taking Stock on News Talk. I'm Vincent Wall, and each week we take a wider view of some of the major shifts in the global economy and those closer to home. You can get in contact by emailing takingstock@newstalk.com or on Twitter at takingstocknt. We're joined now by Kristen Hopewell, Canada Research Chair in Global Policy in the School of Public Policy and Global Affairs at the University of British Columbia and author of Clash of Powers, US-China Rivalry in Global Trade Governance. Kristen, you're very welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, we're speaking elsewhere this week about the incoming Biden administration's challenges on the domestic front. But of course, they will have lots of challenges on the global trade front as well, particularly in terms of their relationship with China, which you write about a lot in the book. And I suppose a lot has changed even since Biden was vice president 4 years ago, in that China's power and influence and aggression has continued to grow even in that short period, while the rest of the Western world in particular has been thrown and confused by the Trump administration attitude to trade, and they're drawing in on themselves and their aggression. So it's a changed world for the Biden administration, particularly in relation to China.
Certainly, yes. We've seen a dramatic increase in China's economic power. It's also been increasingly throwing its weight around, both in its region and globally. And of course, Trump has really wreaked havoc on the trading system. You know, we've seen Trump blatantly disregard the rule of law, any respect for multilateral cooperation on trade. The U.S. had spent really 70 years trying to construct an open liberal trading order, and Trump came in and really threw a wrecking ball at that whole system. Trump has, you know, arbitrarily imposed tariffs on all of the U.S.'s major trading partners. He launched a trade war with China, as well as trade conflicts with many other countries. He's blatantly violated the rules of the WTO. He's also thrown the WTO's dispute settlement system, its mechanism for resolving trade disputes, into severe jeopardy by blocking appointments of judges to the WTO appellate body, which effectively acts as a Supreme Court for global trade. And he's used trade really as an instrument of economic coercion against other countries. So the world is eagerly waiting to see what Biden is going to do on trade, and hopefully we'll see a shift in U.S. trade policy under President Biden. But there's a big question mark about what's going to happen.
Yeah, and we'll come to that in just a moment, Kristen. But obviously a hugely disruptive past 4 years in terms of U.S. trade policy. But there were changes already to that global order put in place by the United States and Europe largely, particularly the WTO structures. A lot of changes just by the advent of the likes of China, India and Brazil to the top table. And they took a different attitude to trade.
Yeah, and this is what we've seen. Even before Trump, the multilateral trading system was really in crisis as a result of exactly the power shifts that you mentioned, particularly the rise of China. What we'd seen is that conflict between the U.S. and China had become an increasingly predominant dynamic in the trading system and in institutions like the WTO, the World Trade Organization, where this conflict between the U.S. and China had really paralyzed the WTO's negotiation function, the ability of states to come together and negotiate, agree on new global trade rules, new rules to govern the global economy. The U.S. and China, even before Trump, had really been engaged in a battle to try to set the rules of global trade, and each had been trying to, shape the rules in a direction that would benefit and advance its own interests. And the two countries were really at loggerheads, and that had caused the breakdown of the Doha round of trade negotiations, which states had been trying to negotiate for over a decade since 2001. That had broken down because of an impasse specifically between the U.S. and China. And also, since the Doha Round collapse, states have been trying to negotiate narrower trade agreements at the WTO on a range of different issues, things like agriculture subsidies, fisheries subsidies. But there, too, those negotiations had repeatedly broken down because of an impasse between the U.S. and China. So, you know, the problems in the trading system definitely run much deeper than Trump. This U.S.-China conflict is creating serious problems for the functioning of the trade regime.
And you write in the book about what you call the China paradox, that over and above anything else, and China's increasingly aggressive and self-confident approach to trading and to its position in the world, it's this fact that China is both a developing country and an economic powerhouse, and that creates its own challenges in terms of how to try to come to a stable relationship with it.
Certainly, yes. I mean, this has been really at the heart of the conflict between the U.S. and China at the WTO. It's this issue of how China should be treated in the international trading system under global trade rules. And it is this paradoxical nature of China that makes this issue so challenging. China is, on the one hand, a major economic power. You know, it's now the world's second largest economy. It's the world's biggest trader. So it has this economic heft. But at the same time, it remains a developing country. It still has, you know, relatively low levels of per capita income. It still has significant challenges with trying to tackle poverty, trying to foster its own development. And this paradoxical nature of China, this fact it's both a major economic power and a developing country, has really created a big source of conflict at the WTO. Under WTO rules, typically, developing countries are given what's called special and differential treatment. They're allowed greater scope to protect their economy through things like tariffs and subsidies to try to foster the growth of their industries, to try to foster economic development. But the U.S., of course, strongly objects to giving any special treatment to China, the country that it sees as its major economic competitor and also increasingly the chief rival for its dominant position in the global economy. So this conflict over special and differential treatment is really at the root of the paralysis in international trade negotiations. China insists that as a developing country, it should have access to special and differential treatment, but the U.S. refuses to give that sort of treatment to China. So this is what's paralyzed WTO negotiations.
And bringing us right up to date, Kristen, have we got to a stage where, because of China's growing power and influence, and because of the confusion that has been sowed by the Trump administration, countries like Australia that are effectively being belittled by China in many ways, politically and diplomatically, have no choice but to get involved in trade treaties with China. We saw the landmark Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement signed between 15 countries in Asia, dominated by China, there last autumn. But the likes of Australia, the likes of Japan and Korea, who have never been great friends with China and are concerned about them otherwise, are in there at the table because of China's trading power.
Yeah, I think one of the big concerns for countries like Australia, also countries like Canada, a growing number of countries, is the way in which China is now using its economic power. You could say it's sort of taken, following in the lead of the U.S. under Trump, and it too is increasingly weaponizing trade. It's increasingly been using trade as an instrument of economic coercion. And we've seen this very clearly in the case of Australia, where when Australia, you know, voiced criticism of China for the way that it handled the outbreak of COVID-19, China responded by retaliating against Australia and, you know, levying billions of dollars, blocking billions of dollars of Australia's exports to China. And we've seen something very similar with Canada as well, where in retaliation for Canada's participation in the extradition of a senior Huawei executive, a Chinese citizen, to the U.S., China has retaliated against Canada by imprisoning two Canadian citizens, two innocent Canadians, for over 2 years, and also blocking exports from Canada to China as well. So there's a lot of concern amongst countries that China is increasingly throwing its economic weight around and using the power of its large market, its economic power, to essentially bully weaker countries, to use its economic weight as an instrument of coercion against countries like Australia and Canada.
And yet the likes of Australia has entered that regional trade agreement, now one of the largest such trade agreements in the world. Now, there are a lot of other Asian countries in there as well, but it has had to sit down and, I suppose, in realpolitik, sign an agreement involving China.
Yeah, so this RCEP agreement is really a landmark agreement. This is now one of the world's biggest free trade agreements, involving 15 countries across the Asia-Pacific region. And this is really seen as a significant diplomatic achievement for China. This is a free trade agreement that China has really been at the center of, and this is seen as an important way for China to deepen its relations, trading relations, economic relations with countries in the region even further, to expand its sphere of influence, to draw these countries closer into its economic orbit. So this is seen as an important symbol of this shift in the center of global economic gravity to China, and also potentially a threat to the U.S., who also is interested in increasing its power in the region. And the signing of the RCEP agreement may put added impetus on the incoming Biden administration to consider rejoining the CPTPP, the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is sort of seen as the U.S. rival to the RCEP agreement. So there's sort of this battle going on between the U.S. and China as they're each seeking to extend their influence into this region.
Our guest here on News Talk is Kristen Hopewell, author of Clash of Powers, U.S.-China Rivalry in Global Trade Governance. And we're talking to her about the evolving trade relationship between the U.S. and China, the world's two strongest military and trading powers. How do you think the incoming Biden administration is going to try to deal with China in particular, Kristen?
That's the big question I think the world is watching to see right now. Biden has signaled that he intends to make a significant change in the U.S. Approach to international affairs. Under Trump, we saw the U.S. really violating international law, turning away from multilateralism, international cooperation. And Biden has signaled that he intends to reverse that. He intends to recommit the U.S. to multilateralism, to international institutions, to abiding by the rule of law. And he also intends to try to rebuild U.S. alliances. But he's been very light on specifics in terms of what he actually intends to do specifically on trade and in the realm of trade policy. We do know that Biden shares many of Trump's concerns about China's trade policy specifically. He's concerned about China's heavy use of industrial subsidies, forced technology transfer, its intellectual property violations. So China is likely to be a big focus of the Biden administration, but I think we can expect Biden to try to address those concerns by working through international institutions like the WTO and also in partnership with traditional U.S. allies like the European Union, like Japan, in order to try to better address China's trade practices. So there, one of the big questions will be whether the EU and the U.S. can resolve some of their trade irritants, some of their trade tensions, in order to work together cooperatively to address their shared concerns about China.
And while we would all hope and expect for a more reasonable, reasoned and predictable approach by the Biden administration generally to global trade and to its relationship with China, it's well known that Biden himself and the Democratic Party generally are not hugely different in their attitude to China's growing dominance than their Republican counterparts. And all the while, political strains continue to grow, the likes of Taiwan, what's recently happening in Hong Kong, the whole question of human rights with the Uyghurs. So trying to come to some sort of stable, predictable trade relationship with China is going to be made difficult by those political strains in the background.
Certainly, yeah. And I think this is the big issue right now. I mean, originally, the U.S. strategy towards China was to try to integrate China into the global economy, into global institutions like the WTO, the World Trade Organization. The U.S. was a big advocate of bringing China into the WTO back in the early 2000s. And part of its goal was to try to integrate China into these liberal global institutions with the objective of fostering economic growth in China, hoping that The growth of the middle class in China would help lead to democratization, to greater demands internally within China for things like human rights protections. But instead, we've seen just the opposite. We've seen, particularly under President Xi Jinping, China going in a much more authoritarian direction. We've also seen growing concerns about human rights violations in China, whether that's in Xinjiang or the crackdowns on the democracy movement in Hong Kong. We've also seen growing concerns about the way that China is asserting itself in its region and also in its relations with, as we talked about earlier, weaker countries like Canada and Australia and others. So I think there's a lot of concern about what type of China, what type of power China will be as its economic might continues to grow in future, how China will use its power on the international stage. And there's a lot of growing concern about both this authoritarian turn within China, but also its increasingly aggressive stance in the region and beyond.
And certainly in the past, when the Soviet Union was the main threat, they tended to test the mettle of an incoming president pretty quickly in the early days. But finally, I suppose, Kristen, are you positive about the fact that the incoming President Biden has decided to appoint a fairly senior person, an Asia czar, as it's being dubbed, Kurt Campbell, who's a very experienced diplomat and was a key architect of the Obama administration's pivot to Asia, that senior person within his administration will have responsibility for Asian trade and for trying to, I suppose, rebuild relationships with a lot of the US's former allies in the region?
Certainly, I think that's a good sign. I think generally the signals from the Obama administration are that we're going to see a much more reasoned and careful approach to U.S. relations with China, with Asia, and with the rest of the world. So hopefully we can expect to see more predictability and more stability in U.S. foreign economic policy, U.S. foreign policy, and hopefully that bodes well for the stability of the global economy and also the stability of global politics right now. And certainly there are a lot of issues like COVID-19, both dealing with the health crisis and also the economic recovery, that are really going to demand international cooperation. So hopefully we'll see a U.S. that's much more oriented towards that international cooperation, both on economic issues and also on political issues.
I think we can all say amen to that. But we'll leave it there. That was Kristen Hopewell, Canada Research Chair in Global Policy in the School of Public Policy and Global Affairs at the University of British Columbia, and author of Clash of Powers, US-China Rivalry in Global Trade Governance. Kristen, thanks indeed for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.